This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 49 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I won't bore you with some stupid intro of me talking about a random Nintendo 64 game or how I was pantsless when I saw that the NFL's official Twitter account tweeted out the nickname Babytron on Wednesday, a nickname that I came up with back in May for Kenny Golladay. That happened, but I won't talk about that. I won't talk about the greatest accomplishment of my life. Instead, we'll just get right into the start sits. But before doing that, I wanted to send out a quick note that with the NFL season here, remember that you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. Now let's get to these start sits. You guys are going to yell at me for this, but I do think that Carson Palmer is a start-worthy quarterback again in week two. It's going to feel uncomfortable, but he's in a very, very good spot against this Indianapolis secondary. Last week, Jared Goff, against this Colts secondary, went on to throw 306 yards on just 29 attempts. Last season, he averaged 5.31 yards per attempt, and in week one, it was 10.55. He went from 5 yards per attempt to over 10 yards per attempt. One of the main ways that Goff was able to dissect this defense, and I can't believe that I'm saying Jared Goff dissected a defense, but one of the ways that he was able to beat the defense was through the deep ball. And that's kind of surprising because he did not utilize that much at all last season. He went 5 for 6 for 136 yards and a score on balls that traveled 15 or more yards through the air in week one, giving him a perfect quarterback rating on those tosses. Meanwhile, with Carson Palmer in this Bruce Arians offense, what do they like to do? They like to throw the ball deep. They like to chuck the ball down the field. Last year, Carson Palmer was 10th among relevant quarterbacks in percentage of pass attempts that traveled 15 plus air yards. And in 2015, he ranked first. The Colts secondary is basically a college unit without Vontae Davis there. And it does not sound like Vontae Davis is going to play this week. Carson Palmer, as a result, could have a great game. Another quarterback I don't mind, and I mentioned him last week, is Sam Bradford. Against New Orleans on Monday night, Sam Bradford was able to complete 8 of 9 of his deep passes for over 200 yards and a score. He ended the week with the most passing yards on those deep balls, having thrown it deep roughly 4 more times in week 1 than he averaged all of last year. And remember, I talked about this going into the season. Sam Bradford completed a lot of his deep tosses last year. He was 6th in the league in completion percentage on throws that went 15 or more yards down the field last season. But he was 6th lowest in air yards per attempt because he didn't throw it deep very often. He threw it deep often in week 1 and we saw what happened. But the Steelers, who he's playing in week 2, that's an obvious different opponent than New Orleans. The Steelers can pressure the quarterback better than the Saints can. Last week, they ended their game against Cleveland with 8 quarterback hits, which was the 5th most in the entire NFL. They're going to get to Sam Bradford more than the Saints got to Sam Bradford. And that's my fear, is that if Sam Bradford is under pressure, he might not throw the ball down the field as much as what we saw in week 1. He's also on the road, and he's not a favorite. Because of those reasons, I don't mind Sam Bradford as a quarterback streamer, but I do like Carson Palmer more. Two other players that I think you can play, Alex Smith at home against Philadelphia. I would play Alex Smith over Sam Bradford, but I think you can make the case that Carson Palmer is a better play than Alex Smith. And then obviously Ben Roethlisberger. I think some people might be afraid of this Minnesota defense, but Ben Roethlisberger at home is money in the bank. If you're considering playing Jay Cutler, don't. You might look at his matchup this week and think that it's not that bad because Trevor Siemian just lit up the Chargers defense with almost 23 standard fantasy points in week 1. But Siemian also needed a rushing touchdown to get there. The truth is, this Chargers secondary is pretty good. They have Jason Verrett, Casey Hayward. They were a top 10 schedule-adjusted defense according to NumberFire metrics last season, and that was without Jason Verrett. Now they have Jason Verrett back. I think they can really win against this Jay Cutler passing attack. So I would not be playing Jay Cutler here in week 1. He's a very, very risky start. Another player who I think is risky to start is Matthew Stafford. He had a great performance in week 1 despite that tough matchup against Arizona, but he also was at home. And at home over the last 3 seasons, Matthew Stafford has averaged 3 more fantasy points scored per game. Now, the Giants secondary did not have their greatest game on Sunday night, but it's a very talented group. And this is really big too. Vegas seems to think this as well, as this week's contest currently sits with a 43.5 point over-under with the G-men as 4-point home favorites. Overall, I'm very worried that this game is just low scoring. And if that's the case, Matthew Stafford is not going to be very fantasy relevant. I like Matthew Stafford a lot more in a dome at home than I do on the road. A couple other quarterbacks that I would be sitting this week. Dak Prescott is very risky against Denver for obvious reasons that Denver secondary is beastly. And Andy Dalton, after his horrible, horrible week one performance, gets the Houston defense this week. He should be a little bit better, but I'm still not trusting him in my fantasy football lineup. The first running back that I have as a start is Terrence West, who will be playing at home against Cleveland. You might look at the snaps from week one and see that Buck Allen actually outsnapped Terrence West. I think that had a lot to do with the fact that Baltimore was up in that game and they didn't need to run Terrence West to death in order to win that game. But don't get me wrong, Buck Allen is a great waiver wire ad, which I talked about on the 15 transaction show, and he's going to see the field in this game. And he's going to be the primary pass catching back in that backfield. But Baltimore in this game, they're 7.5-point favorites. Terrence West is the goal line back on this team. He was the only running back last week who saw a goal line touch. I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities to run the ball against Cleveland, and I think Terrence West is a lock to see double digit and up to 15 carries this week, which is great against his defense. The next two backs that I'm going to talk about as start-worthy backs are certainly better in PPR leagues than not because they're primarily pass-catching backs. The first one's James White. And you know, I mentioned that he's a pass-catching back, but he saw 10 carries against the Chiefs in week one. Those are the most attempts that he's ever seen in a game throughout his career. The Patriots are playing in New Orleans this week in the Superdome, the Coors Field of NFL stadiums. James White last week played the most snaps of any New England running back at 53% of the team snaps. And like I said, he carried the ball 10 times, but he also saw 5 targets through the air. And the thing about his rushing attempts is that we didn't just see them happen in the fourth quarter when we would expect him to be on the field in a negative game script. James White did not see a single rushing attempt in the fourth quarter of that game. The Patriots are favorites in this game. They're 6.5-point favorites right now. And generally, you're going to want to target James White in negative game scripts and not positive ones. But I think given his usage in week one, and given that this game has such a high over-under, I think that James White is actually a very strong play, especially in PPR formats. The other pass-catching back that I'm surprised that I'm talking about today is Alvin Kamara. I think one of the more shocking things that happened in week one, or at least from a fantasy standpoint, was that Alvin Kamara's usage was out of control for New Orleans. He led the Saints backfield in snaps, and he got the ball 7 times on the ground with another 6 targets through the air. A huge red flag for Alvin Kamara entering the NFL was rushing attempt market share, or the percentage of touches that he saw in that Tennessee backfield in college. He only averaged 9.36 carries per game during his final season at Tennessee. That's not good from a college production standpoint. And to be truthful with you guys, I wrote an article about this on NumberFire. We normally don't see successful NFL running backs who didn't carry a large workload in college. That was the big red flag for Alvin Kamara. To see him get 7 rushing attempts in week one is a huge surprise. But like I've said with Alvin Kamara throughout the offseason, he landed in the perfect spot for his skill set. And I do think that his passing game volume in that week one contest against the Vikings is certainly noteworthy, because the Saints could be in a negative game script against New England, which means Alvin Kamara could be on the field, which means he could catch a lot of passes again. They're 6.5-point underdogs. So if you lost David Johnson, rest in peace, pour some out. If you lost David Johnson and you need a running back fill-in, especially in a PPR format, I think Alvin Kamara is a pretty savvy play this week. A couple other running backs that I think you can get away with playing. I don't mind Jaquizz Rodgers and what should be a positive game script for Tampa Bay against Chicago, even though that Chicago defense is a lot better than what people give them credit for. And then I mentioned him earlier, but I think Buck Allen as a deeper play is still totally fine, especially if that Ravens game gets out of hand as 7.5-point favorites. Now, on the flip side of things, I don't think that you should be playing Amir Abdullah this week. Now, as I noted with Matthew Stafford, scoring opportunities might be limited for the Lions in week two. And to be honest, even if they weren't, I'm not sure how confident Amir Abdullah owners should be feeling today. He played 51% of the team snaps in week one, which was just the 27th highest at the running back position in all of football, And while he did see a goal line carry with Zach Zenner inactive, teammate Dwayne Washington had as many carries, two of them, as Amir Abdullah had from within his opponent's 10-yard line last week. And like I said earlier, Vegas thinks that there might be a negative game script for Detroit in this game. And if that's the case, this is the fear with Amir Abdullah. Theo Riddick will be on the field, not Abdullah. And then, on top of all this, and I know that last week did not reflect this, but the Giants have a good rush defense, you guys. The Giants can stop a Detroit rushing attack. All of these factors make me not want to start Amir Abdullah in week two. I think you also should be sitting Rob Kelly. I've driven the Rob Kelly is not good at running the football narrative into the ground. That's not what I'm here to do today. Last week, just three of Rob Kelly's 10 attempts were deemed a success according to NumberFire's expected points model, which is certainly below average at the running back position. Usually a 40% success rate is about average. It's a small sample size though, I get it. He played 52% of the team's snaps against the Eagles last week, and now that's not a terrible number for a running back. Like I noted with Amir Abdullah, that's a top 30 number at the position. But for someone like Rob Kelly, that's kind of scary. Because Rob Kelly is not some efficient running back. You want non-efficient running backs to be on the field as much as possible. You need opportunity to make up for the inefficiency. And he saw just one target and he had 30 yards on the ground. Now in week two, the Rams are expecting Aaron Donald to be back, which makes this matchup even worse on paper. Basically, the way that I view Rob Kelly is that he's a touchdown-dependent asset in fantasy football. And last week, he didn't even see a goal line touch. I'm just not convinced that he's a good play this week against a defensive line that's getting one of the best defensive linemen in the world back into their lineup. Some other running backs that you should sit this week, Joe Mixon didn't see good usage in week one. There is a three-headed monster in Cincinnati right now. I do think Joe Mixon will eventually take over that backfield or see the majority of snaps in that backfield, but you cannot play him this week, let alone against Houston. And then while Matt Forte out-snapped Bilal Powell in week one, I think there could be an ultra negative game script against Oakland in week two, and therefore Bilal Powell, the better pass catcher, might be on the field a little bit more. So I would not be playing Matt Forte. Though I wouldn't be playing Matt Forte in most circumstances. Probably my favorite start of the week comes at wide receiver, and that's John Brown, who's going to be going up against the Indianapolis Colts. Brown played a solid 84% of Arizona snaps in week one against the Lions, but fantasy owners might be a little upset that he only finished with four catches for 32 yards. The good news, though, is that he saw a near 20% target market share in that offense, getting nine targets. And according to Kevin Cole's expected fantasy points model that uses air yards to help determine how many fantasy points a player should have had, Brown simply underperformed based on his usage in week one. You can follow Kevin on Twitter, @Cole_Kev. His expected fantasy points total was 17.5 PPR points, but he scored a little bit more than seven. That difference was the third highest at wide receiver this past week. That doesn't simply mean that John Brown is bad. This is regression at play. Matchups happen, bad luck happens. It's not just because John Brown is a bad wide receiver as to why he underperformed the way that he did. This is what regression is all about. Had John Brown met expectation, the entire fantasy industry would be talking about how John Brown could be a wide receiver too this season. Now, obviously, Larry Fitzgerald is the go-to guy in that offense, and he's going to get love this week against the Colts. But please, do not sleep on John Brown. I also like Randall Cobb a lot. We saw great usage out of him in week one. He played 77% of the team's snaps, easily led Green Bay in targets with 13 of them. And he's playing in a game that's going to be very, very high scoring in Atlanta between the Falcons and the Packers. You know, it's crazy. I was researching Randall Cobb and I was looking at how many red zone targets he had this past week because he had 13 targets. That's a lot of targets. And I saw that he did not have a single red zone target. Then I looked at how many red zone throws Aaron Rodgers had and he had zero. The Packers ran one play this past week in the red zone. But the theme for this week in general and the start-sit show, and really the way that you should approach fantasy football, is to target high enough usage players in games that should see a lot of points. And last season, when the Packers met the Falcons in the NFC Championship, Randall Cobb accounted for 9 of Aaron Rodgers' 45 pass attempts, which is about a 20% market share, and he finished with 6 catches and 82 yards. I think he can certainly duplicate that performance here in week 2. I'm going to go back to my 15 transaction show and talk about someone that I referenced on there, and that's Chris Hogan. I love Chris Hogan as a start this week. Last year, Tom Brady averaged 6.25 15-plus air yard throws per game. He was throwing it deep about 6 times per game. Last Thursday, he threw 15 of them, the most of any quarterback in week 1. Chris Hogan was on the receiving end of four of those passes. That's huge against the Saints defense, who I mentioned earlier were absolutely destroyed against Sam Bradford's deep ball last week. And look, the things that we like about Chris Hogan went far beyond the four deep ball targets that he got from Tom Brady in week one. He ran over 64% of his routes from the slot, which is the area of the field that Brady loves to target. And he played 90% of New England snaps. That 90% snap rate was the 16th highest of any wide receiver in football this past week. So Chris Hogan's going to be on the field a lot in a very high-scoring game in the slot for Tom Brady. What more could you want out of a player this week? Three other wide receivers that I do like this week. Kelvin Benjamin, I think, is going to have a bounce-back week against a questionable Buffalo secondary. I think Paul Richardson is a deeper play against San Francisco. We saw him see some deep targets from Russell Wilson this past week. They're back at home where they usually perform better. And Tyrell Williams. Tyrell Williams saw pretty good usage even though he faced Denver secondary. Now he gets Miami. I think Tyrell Williams is actually in a pretty good spot this week. The first wide receiver to sit to me is pretty obvious, and it's T.Y. Hilton against Arizona. It's a tough matchup. He's going to see Patrick Peterson, but even aside from that, I don't know how you can trust T.Y. Hilton right now without Andrew Luck. He finished week one with seven targets. That's great, but he only caught three of them and he had 57 yards. And 32 of those yards came on one play. But I just don't see what the upside is. The Colts are at home with one of the worst implied team totals on the week, so there's lack of scoring. Like I said, the matchup isn't great, so he might not see that much volume. And they have no quarterback. We don't even know who the quarterback's going to be. You have to bench T.Y. Hilton until we know that Andrew Luck is under center. I also don't love Pierre Garçon this week. We know that Pierre Garçon is going to see a lot of volume each week because there's no one else for Brian Hoyer to throw to. But I am worried about the San Francisco offense in Seattle this week. They have just a 14-point implied team total, which is atrocious. And last week, the Panthers were able to get to quarterback Brian Hoyer very frequently, hitting him eight times and sacking him on four of them. Meanwhile, the Seahawks defense, a better front seven than what you have in Carolina, got to Aaron Rodgers in week one at the exact same frequency. Now imagine the Seahawks defense trying to get to Brian Hoyer. Quite simply, and this is very, very simple, if you're looking for any sort of upside, Pierre Garçon is not the player that you want to target. That offense could struggle a lot in Seattle this week. Other wide receivers that I would sit, I don't know how you can trust Brandon Marshall right now. I wouldn't play him as long as Odell Beckham is not playing. And then I also don't love Marvin Jones this week in a tough matchup against that New York secondary. Moving to tight end, I'm going to go back to Kobe Fleener this week. Again, we're targeting players in games where a lot of points are going to be scored. That's what you're going to get in New Orleans. But now we have a two-game sample instead of a one-game sample of Kobe Fleener as a Saint playing without Willie Snead. And in those two games, he's now seen 17 targets, 12 catches, and 2 touchdowns. Now, he didn't play a ton of snaps in week one against Minnesota, which is a little bit worrisome. He only played 52% of the team's snaps. But like I said, we're aiming for players in games that will see a lot of points. I think Kobe Fleener could easily see 7 or 8 targets this week, which makes him very viable from a fantasy perspective. Another tight end that I love is Eric Ebron. You guys know that I was into him going into the season, and he certainly underperformed in week one, but it was a very, very difficult matchup for him. This matchup is actually pretty nice for him. Even though I've talked down Matthew Stafford, I talked down Amir Abdullah, the Giants cannot stop opposing tight ends. Last season, they surrendered the fourth most fantasy points to the position, and even in week one, Jason Witten, in all his dad running glory, had 7 catches, 59 yards, and a touchdown on 9 targets against this Giants defense. Eric Ebron only had 3 targets in week one, but I expect that to change dramatically in week two. A couple of other tight ends that I think you can start, Zach Miller, who's kind of the de facto number one target for the Chicago Bears offense. I think he's a deeper play, but he should see some volume. Not a bad streaming option. And Jared Cook's another streaming option I don't mind. He played a decent amount of snaps in week one, caught all 5 of his targets, and he's playing the Jets, who were torched by Charles Clay in week one. The tight end that I think that you have to sit is Hunter Henry. This is pretty obvious. I mean, I thought Hunter Henry was going to do something against Denver in week one because teams generally utilize their tight ends when attacking that Denver defense. Instead, he did absolutely nothing and he was outsnapped by his geriatric teammate, Antonio Gates. Until we see Hunter Henry on the field more, we cannot start Hunter Henry in fantasy football. Two other tight ends that I might consider sitting, I would definitely sit Jack Doyle against Arizona. Tough matchup for him. He doesn't have a quarterback, yada, yada, yada. I would consider in a shallower league benching Tyler Eifert just because of his usage in week one. But I do think that there's a possibility, a strong one too, that he finds the end zone, because that's what Tyler Eifert's game is. So that's more of a recommendation for a league that has, say, 8 teams rather than one with 12. On defense, I am obsessed with the Baltimore Ravens this week against Cleveland. We saw the Steelers get to DeShone Kizer 7 times in week 1 because DeShone Kizer continues to just look down the field to make those big plays. That's his game. That's what DeShone Kizer does. And that could be really tough against Baltimore, even more difficult than it was against Pittsburgh, because Baltimore has a very good secondary, a top 10 secondary personnel-wise, and they crushed Andy Dalton in week 1. You saw that secondary at work. They picked him off 4 times and they sacked him 5 times. If DeShone Kizer thinks that he can get away with holding onto the ball in that pocket and trying to find that deep play, he might struggle a lot in week 2. I think Baltimore's defense is a great, great play this week. Other defenses you can start, even though Oakland's defense personnel-wise isn't fantastic, they should be fine as 13.5-point favorites against the Jets at home. Arizona against Indianapolis, we saw what Indianapolis's offense did for the Rams defense last week. And then if Cincinnati's on your waiver wire, which they are on some, I love them against Houston. Again, another inept offense playing against a decent defense. You know, a defense that I said to sit last week, I have again this week, and that's the Minnesota Vikings. They played fine defensively on Monday night. You walked away from that game and said, man, Minnesota's defense is good. But when you face a top 10 offense or a top 5 offense like Minnesota did, you can look at the fantasy point bottom line and realize why you're not playing those defenses against those top 5 offenses. Minnesota's defense only scored 2 points in standard fantasy leagues despite what looked like a very good performance. Now they're going to Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, where the Steelers have averaged nearly 30 points per game over the last 2 years. I just don't think starting the Vikings defense is worth it at all. On the other side of the field in that game, I don't like the Steelers defense at all either, given what Sam Bradford did in week 1, and I wouldn't play Philadelphia's defense going into Kansas City either. That's going to do it though for today's show. Thank you all for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so ASAP by going to iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Google Play, and Stitcher. And also, I've got some good news. Moving forward, each month through the entire NFL season, we're going to be giving away 1 free NumberFire premium membership to a lucky person who leaves a rating and review of this show on iTunes. So get on that. Go search for the Late Round Podcast on iTunes, leave a rating and review, and at the end of the month, you could be the new owner of a free year-long NumberFire premium membership. Don't forget that you can also follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. You can send mailbag questions to that, or you can also email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you tomorrow with the mailbag show.